Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. The coin and stamp experts are back for another round of calls from all you collectors out there. Bob Scott and David Tripp join us this afternoon. Some breaking news. The UK is finally issuing all stamps as self-stick. This is the sort of breaking news you can only get in public radio. If you have a stamp or coin question, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your question. If maybe you found something that you think is worth something and you want Bob Scott to say, no, it's not, it's voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins, your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's stamps and coins today, and we have with us a couple of real experts on the subject. Bob Scott was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He's currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. David Tripp is the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant. And his Christmas card this year, he's a cartoonist, his Christmas card this year, hilariously funny, very dry and good. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you have a stamp or coin question, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. How you doing, fellas? Cold enough for you?
Oh, boy. This is the first time we've ever actually been warm in the studio.
Yeah, it is too warm. I'm going to turn this down during the break.
Okay, so you otherwise know, we'll just nod out everybody can listen to Z's.
I mean, I think Lucas Willard likes it very warm, mm-hmm. and he does Midday Magazine. Yeah. I like it very cold. I forgot to turn it down today. No. If you guys are comfortable, that's fine. You've already preemptively said you like it. So what's new?
Everything.
I've had my first cup of coffee on WAMC.
Really?
Yeah, first one in the studio.
I'm having one myself.
And as you say, it's warm and I don't need a hot drink.
Mm. That's bad coffee. It's delicious.
It's not too bad, actually.
You know, we have to start with the breaking news. The UK has self-stick stamps, and this, to me, is the in this early in 2025, the biggest story of 2025.
Do you know, I think it is. And, you know, it all came from a survey. They said, would you like sticker stamps or would you like to keep on taking out those month-old stamps you've been keeping in your wallet and then licking them?
Right. Well, you know, over here stateside, we also have little sponges that you can moisten the stamps with.
Well, that's
you
probably do. Too advanced for the UK as well.
You do, right. But yeah. there's actually some incredible science in the sticky stamps because they had them 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
The reason that they didn't actually come to market till about 20 years ago is that they had to perfect the concoction they put on the back so that when you put it, like everybody does, the first time you put it down crooked.
You can pick it up.
You can actually move it. You get a couple of fractions of a second just to move it. And as soon as they figured that one out, that's when we got self-adhesives.
Really? So the chemistry of this allows you a second or two before it sets?
That's absolutely right.
Amazing.
Good science.
Well, I guess that's the end of the show. That's all we got here.
Well, once we've recovered from that blockbuster.
So what's all this about a dog, I don't know, with half an ear? David, I was only half listening because I hadn't caffeinated
yet. You were half awake
yet.
Because you hadn't had your caffeine
right.
yet.
Okay. What is this?
Well, we've spoken in the past about the Victoria Cross, which is the highest war medal that the British give,
right.
and it's above everything else. And they're incredibly valuable, and they sell all the time. But only the Brits, where this seems to be our theme today, would actually have come up with a medal for valor for animals.
Mm.
And these were instituted during World War II. And the medal, it says, we also serve, being the animals that were. So during World War II, between 1943 and 1949, there were 50-odd of these medals awarded
All right.
for gallantry by animals during wartime.
Okay.
Now the first question we're going to have, this is the little quiz.
Okay.
So think about animals.
All right.
I will. Which animal received the most medals for gallantry?
In England.
In England.
Oh, would have to be Morton the dog.
No, the most medal.
The one species?
Which species?
Are you allowed flying things?
Yes.
Pigeons,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Sure.
Yep.
Because, yes, carrier pigeons.
And the least.
Oh, the least.
That they've actually been awarded.
Probably cats, because they couldn't
bingo.
Get this.
Bob gets it.
Well, there are other animals, wombats and whatnot, that haven't.
Yeah, but they're not English.
Oh, that's true.
That's, yeah.
Beavers.
So 32 pigeons, 18 dogs, 3 horses, and a cat.
Okay.
But the story is about Antus, the Alsatian or German Shepherd, whatever you want to call it,
right,
that flew on 32 bombing missions.
Stop. Why do you bring a dog on a bombing mission?
Because you just...
Why?
It's your puppy dog.
Company, simply.
That's crazy talk.
It was a Czech airman who discovered Antus as a starving puppy, brought him to England, and he was an airman. He never left him back. So he was actually shot down, flew bombing missions, was wounded, was brilliant because of the phenomenal hearing that dogs had, knew when a German bombing raid was coming in so everybody could take cover. He also helped dig his master out when his master was near it and was covered in rubble, dug him out. And then when they were escaping from the Germans at one point, he pinned a German guard down.
Wow.
And let them escape. So, and this amazing thing. And it's a phenomenal story.
It doesn't make sense to me, David, that you would bring a dog in a bomber. They're very noisy, and animals have very sensitive hearing. They must have gone nuts.
Well, that's why the dog clearly had one of your ears shot off.
We can't even shoot off fireworks in Albany County because the dogs
You're being very 21st century.
I also think that there's a way, way better story because there's the, and I just remembered this and I looked it up, Cher Ami, which was a French carrier pigeon in the First World War that actually flew with messages which saved a whole battalion.
Yeah. That's better.
That the pigeon was, and it was saved Americans. They brought it back. It died in New Jersey, but it was awarded the Croix de Guerre.
Wow.
But
the Dickin Medal is pretty good. And in any event, this one came up for sale in London. It was sold. And there's a great story to this as well. So it was being sold in London at the end of last year.
Uh-huh.
And it brought about $75,000.
That's good money.
Okay. The best part of it is it was sold about 30 years earlier. And the family that sold it had a little bit of a falling out. Half the family wanted to sell it. The other half didn't want to sell it. So the family that did want to sell it, they won. They sold it 30 years ago for $15,000.
Okay.
The other half of the family bought it back 30 years later.
For $75,000.
For $75,000. And they're the family of the people that owned Antus.
Oh,
so it's going back home.
Right. So the family that sold it was the smart half of the family. They made $60,000 profit.
Well, no, they only made $25,000. They pocketed $25,000 30 years ago. The other half of the family had $75,000 to scratch to buy a medal.
That's exciting. Well, it's great.
Well, I bought... take another sip of the coffee and stop yawning.
This is fine. I'm not yawning. David Tripp is here. He's the coin expert. Bob Scott is here. He's the stamp expert. Well, we are off to a rollicking start here today. Self-sticking stamps and dogs with half an ear. What else is new? Now, you have on your list U.S. gold coins, new ones, a big auction. And why is this?
Part of it boggles my mind. Well, no, it all boggles my mind.
Okay.
These were made by, now, okay, can you quickly, and this is last year. So,
right.
So, 2024, does the 230th anniversary excite you about anything? I mean, you know, we think of 200,
no,
250.
Not really.
No. I the 229th does it for me.
Well, that you say, but you
That's
see.
Not helpful.
But he seldom is.
Okay.
So it was the 230th anniversary of the striking of the first silver dollar.
Ah.
So the U.S. Mint made reproduction looking. They were modern and they're dated 2024, not 1794. And because it was the silver dollar, they made a bunch of them in gold.
Oh, well,
which
that
of
makes
course makes perfect sense.
Perfect sense.
Your government
as
in,
one does.
In action.
Okay.
Anyway, they're 1 ounce gold coins. So theoretically, they're worth, what, $2,500, $2,700?
So they're pretty small.
No, they're the size of a silver dollar, basically.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an ounce of gold? Gold is heavy stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's dense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's about that size.
Okay.
Double eagle.
Double eagle. And about that size, exactly. Mm. And so they made 230 of these that actually had a little mark on it that said 230. Mm-hmm. So this was the privy mark, they mm-hmm. called it. And they marketed it through a New York auction house, very famous auction house. And the auction house reckoned that they would bring maybe a little bit over a scrap weight. So they even waived the buyer's premium that they usually charge at auctions. The first lot, which was number one, this is the first one struck. Can we have a drum roll for this? And the dies in a special box.
Yep.
Brought $440,000.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the remaining 229 pieces that sold, the cheapest was $25,000.
Now, you're a coin expert. I mean, can you fathom this?
No.
No.
That's the bottom line. No. It's a created rarity. The dealers I've spoken to, some of them bought these things on spec because they reckoned they could make a quick flip.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one yesterday just sold on eBay for $57,000.
And that was originally sold at 25.
25,000.
So it's doubled again.
In about 3 months.
I wouldn't buy
this
one,
makes,
though.
This makes Bitcoin look cheap.
How many are there altogether?
230 of these.
Okay.
Then there are the ones without the privy mark, of which there are, I think, 15,000.
How soon
and
before
they're selling, these? And they're selling for $5,700 a pop.
How soon before they start turning up with privy marks?
Oh,
and then we can segue from this to our friends in the Far East who are now making fake stamps, too.
Okay, well, let's take a break. Now we're getting somewhere, and the caffeine is kicking in. David Tripp is here. He'll handle your stamp questions. Bob Scott is here. He'll handle the coin. That's right. We'll be back. Joe Pass on the guitar, Les McCann there, and some time ago on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. David Tripp is our guest, and Bob Scott is also our guest. It's Stamps and Coins. We are really off to a flying start here today. We'll get to your calls in just one moment. Quickly, though, as we were heading to break, you mentioned some nefarious doings in the Far East.
Well, you can.
Well, we've had fake coins. I mean, the amount of fake silver dollars, even the gold eagles that you were talking about that are coming in from China are just overwhelming, actually.
Right.
And of course, they're not really gold eagles. They're just dense sort of titanium.
And they plate them?
What they plate them, and then they sell them as genuine. We've always said you need to get things slabbed in a piece of plastic. They're now faking the plastic slabs and then putting the fake coins in them. It is a serious problem.
On a commercial.
The Secret Service for coins does take it very seriously, and they do track it down, and there's a coin dealers association that is working with them to identify them and then alert the government. The same not necessarily can be said for the stamp world.
Well, if you go on eBay today, you can find rolls of 100 forever stamps, which the postage rate is 73 cents, so you would expect to pay $73 for 100. You go to Costco, you can pay $72.75 or something, you'll get a 25 cent break.
Wonderful.
But if you look around, you will see the same rolls being offered at $10 a pop.
And they're fake.
They are fake, and they are impossible to tell from, to the layman, they are impossible to tell from the real ones.
Can you use them to mail stuff?
If you put them in the machines, because postage stamps may seem like silly little pieces of paper. Well, they are silly little pieces of paper. But they do have a type of what's known as tagging. It came from using phosphorescent paint so that electric eyes, when they go through post office machines, can tell them. They don't have these.
Ah.
So they do get spotted. But the thing is, they're selling them openly, and the post office doesn't seem to be doing anything about it.
And why do you think that is?
It could be just the wording, because they can show a picture of a stamp and they don't actually call them forever stamps. But it's patently obvious that this is the thing, and it needs to be stopped.
Okay.
Because it's doing an enormous amount of damage, because there's a huge amount of unused postage out there that dealers thrive on, and they can't sell anything.
That's so interesting. I mean, David, you mentioned that the Secret Service, at least with coins, is they're on this, and they're looking for counterfeits. But if the counterfeiter is in the depths of China, and they find out here on the stateside that this is counterfeit, what are you going to do? How are you going to follow up?
They try and track them down through the internet, because in China, they actually sell these things as counterfeits.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get mass marketers that sell them through. They're trying to pinch it off once it hits the United States with the hope that it'll choke it back. It's not going to happen.
And you have to remember
they're getting more and more sophisticated. What happened is, in the beginning of the 20th century, a lot of U.S. When the government changed over their printing machines, their presses, they sent the old ones to China. The Chinese never threw them away.
Oh.
So they've refabricated them. So you've actually got coins that are being made on U.S. presses of the period that would have been made at the same stuff. This stuff is getting more and more sophisticated. And now that you can scan a genuine piece and create a die out of it,
They're making real ones.
They're making real ones.
But here's the thing. So let's just say David is a coin dealer, and he buys a whole raft of these from China. The Secret Service pinches them at the border.
Right.
You're penalizing the dealers who already spent the money on them.
Yeah, but the dealers who are buying them know that they're nasties.
Exactly.
Okay, they're not buying them as genuine.
But at least they're doing something about it. I mean, the post office police, they have a police department. They do something. But they don't have even close to the power of the Secret Service. Because the Secret Service, you associate with the president and what have you. Secret Service was created to protect the currency in the United States.
That was their first
job. The presidential detail stuff was later.
Was secondary.
After that, Lincoln chap had a problem.
McKinley. It was after McKinley.
Oh, it was McKinley.
Really? Yeah. The Secret Service did not begin until after McKinley.
The Secret Service was there to protect the currency.
Oh, I see.
They only got into presidential protection after McKinley was murdered.
All right, let's get to the phones here at Stamps and Coins with David Tripp and Bob Scott. Our email address is voxpop@wamc.org. One email, and then we'll go to the phones. This is from Helena in Amherst. I have my dad's old coin collection. I don't think there's anything really valuable, but would like some suggestions on where I can sell it. It's got a lot of different stuff in it, including some old paper money. Should I bring it somewhere to have it appraised?
Well, I think we're going to do the easiest thing that we do. We're going to give our number to give an idea of what you've got.
Now, to be clear, you guys are not...
We are not dealers. We do not buy. We do
You're
not
just
sell.
Helping out. This
we
is
are
advice,
helping
and it's
out
free.
To give some advice, which is free.
Okay.
Bob and I, we're just not... never will deal.
You never did?
Nope.
No, interesting.
No. Probably if I had, I'd be broke. I mean, more broke.
Well, geez, I mean, Bob drives a Cadillac. He must be doing all right.
But I've heard somebody else in this room has a Cadillac.
Yeah, I do too, but I'm not doing all right.
Well, you see, there you go.
Yeah.
And I bet yours is later than mine.
No, I think we drive the same model.
Oh, 09?
Oh, no, I'm 11.
Ah, you see?
You see, you're more successful than
me. I am doing better than you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
But I may have less miles.
Oh, yeah. In many ways. All right,
go ahead. He's got more. In any event, so what we would suggest is send us a few images. We can give you some direction or the name of a few books that might help guide you to figuring out what you have. And so we'll go.
The Red Book, right?
You want to start with that? There's the Red Book for that. There's something called Friedberg, which is your emailer mentioned.
Freebird? That's a Leonard Skinner song.
Friedberg.
Ah,
I must enunciate.
Okay, fine.
Which is on U.S. paper money.
Mm-hmm.
But to give you a little bit of a guidance, if you send us a couple of images, we can give you direction. As always, condition.
Right.
Will determine the value. But our email is coinandstampguys, all spelled out, at berk.com.
Okay, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. We begin in Argyle with our buddy Merle. I don't think I've talked to Merle in the new year. Happy New Year, Merle. Welcome.
Happy New Year, everybody.
What's up?
Hey, Merle, how are you?
Two quick questions.
Okay.
The 2024 nickel.
Okay.
I heard on NPR worth 10 times as much as a nickel.
What?
Is that true?
I know what you're getting at, and it's theoretically because it costs that much to produce a
zinc,
nickel.
Right? Or what do they make
they're,
out of?
They are made of nickel.
Well, they are.
But, well, it's an alloy that includes nickel.
Okay.
The point is that the cost of the metal on the open market exceeds the cost of production. And the way the U.S. Mint makes money, it is actually one of the few agencies of the United States government that actually doesn't run a deficit but runs a profit,
right,
is because there's something called seigniorage, which is the difference between what the government pushes the coin out valued at, so nickel, dime, penny, whatever, and what it costs them to produce. So the difference is their profit line.
All right.
Cents and nickels cost more to make than their face value.
And cents have cost more to make for years.
For years.
So why do it? Why? We should have a Department of Government Efficiency. Don't you think?
Oh, my God.
I know, right? I just came up with this.
Elon, I love you.
All right. Okay.
So that's what it is. It costs more. So when you get to quarters, suddenly because there's a bigger spread, it costs essentially the same amount to produce. But let's say there's an 18-cent profit per coin. They make those, and that goes on the press column, which offsets the losses to the cents and the nickels. And I never got a degree in accounting.
Okay.
But I think this works.
So Merle has a 2024 nickel. How does he turn it into 50 cents?
If you melt them, though, you could get theoretically, you're not allowed to melt them or do anything to damage them because you will get a knock on the door from the Secret Service.
Really?
Yes. Mm.
So Merle, don't melt it, man.
Okay. Wait a minute. Don't hang up on me yet.
Okay, buddy.
This had to do with your Red Book.
Yes.
I have a 2003 Red Book.
Okay.
And you were talking about a somewhat modern dime that's worth $2 million.
Oh, the 1975 No S dime.
Yes. And if I look in my book right now, and I'm looking at it, 1975.
It's not in the listings.
It's worth 30 cents.
That's because it has an S. If it doesn't have the mint mark, it's the super rarity that we talked about the last time.
And how many are those of those?
I think there are two of them known.
There are two. Merle, do you have one of those?
Yeah. No,
okay.
Because it says right here in the book, it's 30 cents.
Right, that has the mint mark. It has
that's
the S
with
on
the
it.
Mint mark.
No, the mint mark is D at 25 cents, S at $1.25.
Those are for regular, okay, those are for regular issue coins. Those are the ones that go out. So for 1975, there were a half billion made. 1975S, there were 2 million made.
Right.
They're proofs that don't have the S, that was an error. And so without the S, they're going to be listed there with the S at $2 or whatever it is, $2.50. But without the S, you add a lot of zeros to the end of that two.
Aha. All right, Merle, can I hang up now?
No.
Creepers, creepers. All right, go ahead.
Okay.
Keep going.
The Merle Show. Sorry?
What, Merle?
The book says 30 cents.
Okay. Well, we went through this now,
but
man.
This was 2003. The new price is $2.50.
Ah, okay. So this is... All right. Now, while you're still here, Merle, and Lord knows we love having you here. So the 2003 book...
Right.
It's getting long in the tooth now.
It is.
So how often would you replace the red book? I think mine's 4 or 5 years old
That's pretty good, the market. And it depends. You know, I know the market because I monitor it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Market right now is pretty flat. So mm-hmm. last 2 or 3 years, there was a big uptick after COVID.
Right.
It's started to flatten out. So you're still good for another year, right?
Okay. I'm good for another year. Merle, time for a new red book, my friend. Now I'm going to dispatch you. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's stamps. It's coins. David Tripp. Bob Scott, and looks like Audrey is in Plattsburgh. Hello, Audrey. How are you doing?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just found out about your show. I'm very excited. I have an old collection from my great uncle, starting from the 2 cent stamps through history, all the important things in history till the 70s. He has them in the 4 block.
Yes.
In a single. They all look fine to very fine.
Beautiful. What's the earliest date? I presume we are talking about a stamp collection because coins don't come in blocks of four.
I don't have that with me right now. It's in the other room in a huge waterproof.
But they're
crate.
all in blocks of four.
But they're all in order. Yes. Through history.
Right. Well, through a certain part of history. Now, the question is, we were issuing 2 cent stamps from the 19... Well, the first 2 cent stamp... Oh, I should be able to do this.
Come on, Bob.
We're staring at you.
You need more coffee.
Audrey,
give him a minute.
He's freezing.
I think the first two... Oh...
I also have many canceled ones and a couple from the 1890s also. But
right,
do I go about educating myself to so if I take it to someone to sell,
yes,
that I don't get taken?
Well, the most important thing is
I'm not educated enough.
Yeah, that's always my fear.
We've just had a nice long conversation about the efficacy of the Great Red Book for coins. Well, the same book for stamps is called the Scott Catalogue.
Right, the Scott's Catalogue.
Right, and almost every public library, and some of them still do exist, thankfully, will have a copy of a Scott Catalogue. They may have a general one, and it may be up to 10 years old. You can look up.
I have a friend who ordered one used for me that I haven't gotten yet from 2023. Is that acceptable enough?
2023 will be absolutely fine. In fact, you could probably go back as far as 2014, 2015. The one I have is even older than that, but I kind of know what the relative rarity of the various issues are. What you have to do is, right at the beginning of the catalog, there is an identifier with a picture of all the stamps. So it'll be
correct.
Very easy for you to find out which stamps are which. It will also be very easy to find out what date they start, especially because they're all in blocks.
I think 1901 was the first 2 cent, wasn't it?
Well, there's the Pan American 2 cent, which is a red stamp with a train on it.
Oh.
I'm just wondering whether there was one.
George Washington, right, was on the 2 cent?
No, the 2 cent.
The Washingtons.
Commemorative. Yes. It was a commemorative stamp with a train on it. I will show you a picture of
it. Right,
what is the difference between banknotes?
Between banknotes, I mean, as in paper money, or as in
called banknotes.
They could be fractional currency.
No, what you're talking about is stamps that were issued in the 1870s, and what they're called banknotes because they were printed by the American Banknote Company rather than rather than the Bureau of by the time you get into the early 20th century, they're all printed by what's known as the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Mm. But in all through the early days, I mean, you start off with Tappan Casalir and Company. I mean, it goes through various iterations.
Yeah.
But the American Banknote Company was producing stamps, and they actually produced some interesting, although somewhat bland, stamps in the 1870s, more famous for the cancellations that appear on them.
Aha.
But anyhow, get a copy of a Scots catalogue. Look,
okay,
and you will look them up.
The other thing is, have a shoebox full of first issue cancellations.
First day covers.
And they're canceled. They're plain envelopes with just address.
First day cover has to be canceled to be a first day cover. Quite simply, and unless it really, you will get odd ones that date before 1940 that have nominal value, but the great ones are usually high values before 1920. After that, unless they're sent to somebody
famous.
Pretty good, yeah. Or they are $5 stamps. Mm-hmm. They're really not worth too terribly much, because there are plenty around.
Audrey, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is our number if you have a stamp question for Bob Scott, or a coin question for David Tripp, or a general question about things for me, whatever. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Ah, yes, there we are. Thank you. I don't know what I'm looking at, but I like it. This, you know what? This is exciting. It's stamps and coins, and believe it or not, Bob Scott, who up to now, over the years, has been infallible, has a correction to make. What was that?
Well, I spent all that time talking about banknote stamps from the 1870s, and I was talking about the first 2 cent stamp in 1900. Well, of course, there was a 2 cent green banknote in the 1870s.
Okay,
so
Audrey,
I'm an idiot.
Bob is apologetic, and good luck
and,
with
and
the
book.
And
he's a self-confessed idiot.
Well, I mean, let's just move on from that, and let's read some emails here. This one is from Mary. It's a very long email, but I'll read it, and hopefully there are no swear words in it. My uncle, who was a very serious stamp collector, recently passed away and had charged me with the responsibility of selling his collection. He started the postage collection during World War II. It includes many Scott albums. The oldest includes revenue stamps from the 1870s. Most of the stamps are U.S., but there are also albums for other countries, such as Israel. He continued collecting, often buying stamps at auction through about 2000. He instructed me to work with a stamp dealer in Connecticut who he dealt with to sell the collection. He also indicated he thought the best way to sell the collection would be at auction. Can you provide any advice or precautions I should take to ensure that the proceeds from the sale of the collection are fair? My proceeds will go to my aunt.
Bob.
Yes. Probably the smartest thing you can do with today's world is video your collection.
Oh.
Turn the pages and put it on. And then make sure.
Do you think that'll work in the court of law?
It should do, but the most important thing is if who's ever selling it for you, first of all, if the auction house you're dealing with, make sure they're members of the American Stamp Dealers Association, which has a pretty good honor code that's gives you a fairly good idea that these people are good. Most stamp dealers aren't in the business for a couple of years. It's a lifelong career.
And if you get a bad rep, you're done.
No, yeah. Exactly. And it's very easy to just verify that if these people have been in business for 50 or 60 years, it's not because they're stealing people blind.
Okay.
But it's always good to take, if you get video, then somebody who is away from this, so someone like myself, could just look at the pictures and go, yeah, that looks about right. Or
saying.
I can then say, oh, well, hold it, you've got one of those.
Yeah.
And that's something that should have been mentioned.
That makes sense.
But if you're dealing with something with a company that has a good, long national representation, and reputation, they will be fine.
Fair enough.
They will be absolutely fine.
There are a lot of stamp questions today. This one's from Glenn in Woodstock. U.S. Postal Service began selling mint sets of commemorative stamps in 1972. What would the entire set be worth if you had them from then until the present?
Which particular set did he say?
Says commemorative stamps. U.S. Postal Service began selling mint sets of commemorative stamps in 1972. If you had the entire set from then until now.
Okay, so 50-odd years with an average price of, I think, probably about $40, because I think they started sort of less than 20, but they're probably getting close to $100 now.
Yeah.
So maybe 50 over 50 years, okay. 2,500, halve it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not really a
$1,200.
No, 70s is really considered way too much.
Way too late.
This coin question from Chris in Chatham. You ready?
I am.
All right, here we go. What can you tell us about hobo coins? Is it possible to find one in the wild? Have you come across any? How are they authenticated? What the blue blazes are hobo coins?
Hobo coins. They're generally Indian head nickels.
Oh, why do they call them hobo coins?
Well, I'm going
Therein lies the story.
I'm going to get there.
Is this a Boxcar Willie tune that I don't know?
You can have it in the background.
Okay.
Yeah, they are nickels. Generally, because the head of an Indian head nickel, the Buffalo Nickels, he already had this wonderful profile. And what hobos did, it was an art form. They would, with a sharp object or a knife, they would shape it and change the features to make it look like a different person.
Why?
Why do people whittle wood?
But this is legal tender.
Well, it's only a nickel, and as we know that a nickel, then nickels actually cost less to produce than their face value. So they were noodling with a little thing, and there are serious collectors of hobo coins.
Okay.
It's hobo art, basically.
It is hobo art, and a lot of them look like hobos, so they're probably Boxcar Willie on the train. They had nothing better to do as they were stowing away.
Right.
So they did this. I've never seen one in the wild.
Pretty easy to fake. Are they worth money? I mean, I just find an old coin or buy an old buffalo head and then just do my own.
Well, there you go.
This one looks like David Tripp.
If it's good, people will buy it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. This is all too surreal for me. Diana in Lanesboro. Diana, you're on.
Hello, Diana.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Diana. Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. So I just slammed on my brakes to let two deer cross in front of me 10 feet, and then the third one crossed behind me while I was waiting for my turn, so I'm a little bit hyper.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's as long as Bambi got away.
But they've all got away. It's just me. Yeah. So anyway, my dad, who's was a very avid stamp collector, ordered from places like Mystic, and he has a giant collection.
Yep.
Now he's getting inundated with calls from Bradford Exchange for coins. And he's in a nursing home, and they're just calling him several times a day. I don't even think he knows now what he's buying anymore. I'm his vault.
Yep.
My house is getting full, and I don't know if he's getting ripped off from.
A lot of those telemarketers, yes. It is something.
Thousands
that,
of dollars.
You need to stop. Yeah. Yes,
you need to get it stopped. Either no call registry or something along those lines. What you can do, you said it's the Bradford Exchange. I don't know them by name. What I would do is there's a professional organization called the Professional Numismatists Guild. You can find them online.
Okay.
If you get in touch with them.
Okay.
They can do outreach, and if these people are in any way affiliated with them, they can put the brakes
on it.
They'll try and get it stopped.
The company will stop.
It's a problem. I did an appraisal for somebody a number of years ago whose deceased brother spent all night watching that weird television stuff and bought zillions upon zillions of coins.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night when he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And they were worth a fraction of the price paid.
That's hurtful.
It is very hurtful.
I mean, we're talking, he's got two great-grandsons and a new grandson. and late in life, he's 90, sitting there bored out of his mind.
That's the
and
problem.
He just sits and writes checks, 700 last week for three.
Boy.
Each.
Is
three,
he a member of WAMC by any chance?
I am, but no, he
all right.
is not.
Let's get him on the stick here, all right?
Yeah, but that would be my suggestion. Get in touch with the Professional Numismatist Guild. And just see what they'll give you some good suggestions.
Okay. Yeah. It is essentially elder abuse.
It really is. It's fraud
in some ways.
Although we're not saying that about the Bradford Exchange, mind you.
No. I don't know them. I've never heard of them.
Well, they do commemorative plates and things like that.
I was going to say.
But that's the problem. It's like the only people that ever really made a lot of money out of Franklin Mint were the people that owned stock in Franklin Mint.
Oh, I see.
Because the aftermarket of that stuff is just not
and
there.
And that's one of his other companies, by the way. And they're constantly sending him the brochures and calling all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just too much.
It is much. Yeah.
Where the word limited edition...
Is unlimited.
Is unlimited.
The use of the word limited is unlimited.
All right, Diana, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call, and good luck, and congratulations on not hitting the deer. That's always good. Yeah, some of these companies, if you like my mother-in-law, she had Bradford Exchange plates with birds on them. They were very nice, you know, but obviously you're not going to make money often on that.
The
sort
only
of thing.
Time these things make money is if it's some sort of a gold issue. And you bought it when gold was $300, and now gold is $2,300.
Yeah. Gotcha.
It's as simple as that.
All right, to Colony, and it's Bob's turn. Bob, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
This kind of piggybacks a little bit on the last caller here. What I was calling in regards to was these offers that you see in the newspaper or whatever, for buying... three scarce, seldomly seen coins, for $4.95 or something like that, which they're like the Indian head nickel, the Indian head penny, the mercury dime, and stuff like that. Are those ever going to be worth the $4.95 that you pay for it?
Well, there's one or two big companies that do sell lower grade things. They're based in New Hampshire. They're well known. They have a stamp outlet and they do coins as well. We won't mention any names on the show.
Congratulations.
They're okay. They're to get collectors interested in it. It's low valued stuff. These are basically tickler ads to get people in. Thing you have to remember in terms of the pricing, what you are paying for when you buy from one of these outfits is not merely the actual value of the coin, but you're also paying for the advertising. So if there's a coin that, let's say it's a gold coin that has $100 worth of gold weight in it, they're going to charge, $195 because it's in magazine XYZ that are national and that costs money. So the dealer is building that in. They don't really care about the end market. They care about their profit.
Right.
So you're going to pay a bump up. If you want to buy these things, you can go online. There are fabulous auction houses around the country that sell stuff from $10 a piece to millions of dollars a piece, and they run a straight ship, and you're just bidding against other people, and it's an honest way to do it. It's easier if you don't know than buying these ads, because a lot of people that buy from these ads do then end up giving information, and then the telephone calls start.
It's kind of like our last call.
I'm assuming the same as your prior caller.
Yeah.
Yes. You become a prospect. Once you become a prospect, you...
Yeah.
Once you're on, you can't get off.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right, Bob. Hey.
I have a bridge in New York I'd like to sell you.
Go ahead, Bob.
I have one other question.
Sure.
This has to do... I don't know if you deal with paper money, but this is... Confederate money that was printed. I mean, they used to give it away when I was a kid for nothing.
Well, there are certain issues of Confederate currency which do have some value. Particularly, they were made in Montgomery in 1861.
And beautiful, too.
And they are beautiful. And they do, those are very, very collectible. It's a specialty area. most Confederate currency was not backed by gold as most things were then. And so they just printed them, kind of like, I hate to say it, the Federal Reserve today.
Are you talking about fiat currency again?
Yes.
Stop.
We are.
Just
stop. But these can, if they're in good condition, I think the reference is Criswell, C-R-I-S-W-E-L-L. It's like the Red Book, but for Confederate currency.
Criswell.
And you can probably find something of it online.
All right, Bob, thank you very much. This email from Sam. I'd be interested to hear a little bit of history of the thrime, which I believe is not only a cool-looking coin, but has something to do with the changing price of stamps. Hoping to pull one of these out of the ground someday.
It's trime.
T-H-R-I-M-E?
No, forget the H.
Oh, well, he's got an H in there.
Well, he's wrong.
All right. There's a dime is your 10, and your trime
is your
three.
They were made in both silver and in nickel.
Okay.
And they were designed so that you could pay
for stamps.
The postage rate was 3 cents. There wasn't a 3 cent coin. So they knocked out for a very, very short period. And the people, they just didn't like them.
So these things have some value then?
Oh, absolutely. Collectibles? Yeah.
Well, they're nice. They're wonderfully attractive, very small silver coins.
When did they make them?
They made them between 1851 and 1873. They made them both in silver and in nickel. And the nickel issues from 1865 to 1889.
That's amazing.
And even in crummy condition, the cheapest will run you $25, and then they go up from there.
I got to find one of those.
There you go.
So you could have used a trine to buy an 1863, mea culpa, 2 cent blackjack.
And get a penny in exchange.
No, be darned. Okay. You were going to make a crack about metal detecting, weren't you?
Me?
Yeah.
Never.
Just stop it, all right? Just stop it. Let's go to Clifton Park. Carl, you're on.
I think he detected that.
Hello.
Go ahead, Carl.
Hi.
Hi, Carl.
Yeah, my question. I have my father's stamp collection. I've been listening, so I've already obtained some answers, I think.
Okay, but yes.
He died in 2005. He was born in 1910. And so he was collecting back in the 40s, probably. And I don't have any idea what to do with it. I don't know any of the values. I just pulled it out because of your show to look, because I haven't looked at it. It's got a bunch of envelopes with stamps and postcards, some canceled, some not.
Yes.
And then all kinds of stamps, too. So I don't know. I might get interested and start trying to learn something about it.
The single best way to do it is if you can have an interest in it. Because, as I said to the previous caller, if you can get hold of a Scott catalogue, when I started, they were all in black and white, so you had to kind of make up the colours. They're in full colour now. You can identify everything. And if you're prepared to just read a little bit, you'll certainly just never catch up with all the nuances, but you will get a very good idea of what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And your father, I presume he put them in some sort of order, or did he just keep them sort of randomly in boxes?
There seems to be some order, and then
there's a shoebox
full of stuff.
So he has some order. Collectors, by in their nature, they like to put stamps in order.
Yeah.
Once you can get hold of, you can buy for $10. You can buy a secondhand copy of a Scott catalog, and once you get a reference point, you'll find that the thing on the next page is the thing on the next page of the book. It's so much
cool.
It's logic.
And take an interest because it's fun.
It is fun. Yeah. And thank you for the call. All right, this email came from San Francisco.
Okay.
I have some fairly old albums of stamps. I would guess late 1800s to early 1900s. They're all used stamps and are glued into the book. Most are European. What do I do with them? And again, this is from Leah, who is a Vox Pop listener in San Francisco.
Well, for the most part, you probably have a collection that's been ruined because you really don't want them glued in. However, if you go back to the very, very, very earliest stamp albums, they were glued in. That was the technology. And slightly earlier than that, they thought, because they wanted to make them nice, even portraits to sit on the paper, they cut all the perforations off.
Ah, so
which is horrible. But those, if it's, you can usually tell because there's a preponderance of leather. And if you go through some of those, it's definitely worth having a look. But if it's an obviously 1920s, 1930s album when they've been stuck in, yeah, sure, you can get a Scott album. But if you've got, something, it's probably been ruined.
Okay. Well, that's on that optimistic note, we'll end the show. I'll tell you, Marjorie and Saugerty sent this picture in. Of this really cool
Walking
headband.
Liberty half dollar.
Made into a headband. It's so neat.
It's great. And well, it's fabulous. Yeah.
But it's
worth more as jewelry than it is a coin.
Very cool. All right, we're done here. How do people get in touch with you guys?
It's coin and stamp guys, all spelled out, at Berk, BERK.com.
Splendid job. Great seeing you guys. We'll see you next time fairly soon.
I hope so.
Support comes from Broad and Taylor, makers of bread baking tools and equipment for listeners who are interested in beginning their sourdough journey. Recipes, how-to videos, and store at Broad, spelled B-R-O-D, and Taylor.com. Well, that's it. Thanks again to David Tripp and Bob Scott for being here. Bob and I are now finally awake, and the show's over, so we'll get him next time. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened by Andrea Leon. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's astronomy with Dr. Valerie Rapson. We will gaze heavenward, and we'll take your calls tomorrow at 2:00.